You're listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
Hey guys, it's Adam. Welcome to The Conversation. I'm excited that you're here. And I just want to start by sharing some super exciting good news. Brace yourself. Here it is. It feels like spring has officially arrived in the great state of South Dakota. This winter was the nicest winter I can remember in the history of my life as a longtime South Dakotan, followed by the absolute worst spring that I can remember. It has been cold, it has been windy, it has been horrible, but again, the good news is it feels like spring is here and I am so excited. Well, I'm gonna get off my soapbox here. This week on The Conversation, I sat down with pastor, with author, with friend Scott Sauls. Scott is someone I've known for some time now and I so deeply respect him. He is wise. He's intelligent, just smart, and yet he's also approachable and humble and kind. Two characteristics that you don't always find in one person, and yet I so deeply respect Scott. About 2 years ago, I had Scott on The Conversation. We talked about challenges in ministry, surviving hard season, and handling criticism. If you are a leader outside the church, inside the church, go and check out that episode. There is a link in the show notes. I know it will be an encouragement to you. In this episode, Scott and I, we talk about what he's learned from carrying around regret, hurt, and fear, and how Jesus redeems the pain in our lives. We also talk about lament. What does that mean, and how do we actually go about doing that? And so, whatever you're walking through, whatever regret, hurt, or fear you're processing today, or maybe you're trying to avoid entirely, this episode will encourage you to take a step towards healing today. And so, as always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation. As a pastor, I run into so many people who are carrying around some form of regret, hurt, or fear. Scott, if you're willing, or if it's a part of your story, what has that looked like in your own life? Those kind of three categories, you can pick one if you'd like.
Oh my gosh. I mean, where do I start? Regret, I have many. I've just turned the corner on 50. And so, you know, every year you accumulate more regrets. And if regrets are just those things you can go back on and change, or wish you could at least. Hurts, my hurts are many. A lot of them are self-imposed. I think probably the most public story I've told on my hurts is, various seasons experiencing anxiety and depression. And that includes, seasons while in ministry. Have gone on record in writing and speaking in that regard. And then fears. Yeah. I try to fight fears. I'm trying to become more and more of a future oriented, kind of your future is all your best days are always in the future. Your long-term worst case scenario is resurrection and everlasting life, as coming from the vantage point of a Christian. That's a daily, kind of practice of mine, is to speak to the regrets with the grace of Jesus, and to the hurts with the mercy and kindness of Jesus, and to the fears with the promise and hope of Jesus.
Well, Scott, I love that I can even ask you that question, knowing the person you are. For me, those are the reasons that I want to listen to you. One of the first things I mention when I mention your name is humility. Just because you come as a fellow person on the journey of following Jesus, oftentimes we portray following Jesus
as a way, like that's an easy way of life. Like everything is going to be up and to the right. And a lot of times, honestly, share about different ways to avoid pain. Yet, what does it look like to redeem all these things?
To redeem regret and hurt and fear. I mean, I think that's the whole story of why Jesus Christ came and what he came to accomplish in our lives and in the world. And you know, when questions like that are asked, my mind always goes to the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians 12, which is a really well-known passage where he talks about this thorn in the flesh that he's been given.
Yeah.
And it says that thorn comes from Satan, from evil itself. And yet it's something that God permits. It's something that God authorizes. And you know, Paul, it says, pleads three times with God to remove the thorn. And God's answer is, my grace is sufficient. My grace is enough for you. For my power is made perfect in weakness. And he talks about how that experience, that low point of his, that pain point, is what was used by God to make him a more humble person, you know, to use that word that you just brought up, which is such a key word in you know, just living a healthy, faithful life, is cultivating the virtue of humility. Well, a lot of times those hard seasons are what make that happen. But one of the illustrations I like to use around this is my favorite kind of bread, which is banana bread, which isn't really bread, it's cake. And you know, the main ingredient in banana bread is a rotten banana, and the banana has to be rotten in order for it to work the way it's supposed to work. And you know, the baker mixes that rotten banana in with the sugar and salt and flour and butter and all the other ingredients and works it all together, and then turns the heat up on it, and then it becomes this magnificent, delicious thing. And I think we can look at our, you know, the rotten things in our lives, you know, the regret, the hurts, the fears, and all the rest, the more rotten things. And we can know, just based on the promises of God, that he's going to redeem even that rottenness, right? You know, Romans 8:28 says he works all things together. You know, he, and imagine those things are all the ingredients of our lives, right? The good, bad, and the ugly. Yeah. And he mixes it all together. The heat gets turned up, and what comes out is something better. I think all of us know this instinctively and from experience, that the most compassionate people we know are people who've suffered. The people who are most sympathetic, who show up the best, are the ones who've, you know, been in the pit. You know, somebody, you know, the people who are most likely to be able to talk you out of self-hatred are those who've been there and found grace, you know, or to, you know, comfort you in your pain, or those who've experienced pain themselves. And so, you know, we just become a more solid soul, I think, if we, you know, allow God to do the work he wants to do in those seasons of our lives. And you know, redeem is a great word, right? Because redeem, yeah, means to buy it back, or to get it back, you know, to take what's been stolen or what's been lost and restore it, and leaving it an even better place than it ever was before. And I think God can use the harder things in order to accomplish that, and there's great proof he does, the cross of Jesus Christ being the greatest example of that.
Yeah, that is beautiful. Scott, in your newest book, Beautiful People Don't Just Happen, I'll just say this. This is not, Scott didn't tell me to say this. Scott is one of my favorite authors. I cannot wait personally to get this book. But in the book, you say the more the soul is worked and stretched to its limits, the more able it becomes to endure suffering and enjoy God all at once. I know I think just at any time in my life, but right now specifically, so many people are feeling like they're being stretched to their limits. Advice mm-hmm. for that person, practically speaking, what would you say to that person who just feels like, I'm just being stretched, I'm going through a season of suffering?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think it's important for us, and I think that describes, you know, everyone on some level and in varying degrees, especially given the couple of years that we've just all been through. You know, pandemic threw curveballs to everyone and upended so many things for everyone. And it's kind of left us in this sort of, you know, mode of recovery, like where do we go from here? And I think one of the most important things, I don't assume that all of your listeners are necessarily Christians or people of faith. I assume a lot of them are. But whether you are or not, I would say that the Bible has a ton of really helpful counter voices to those inner voices, that you could call the inner critic that, you know, tells us, you know, you screwed that up, you're a nobody, you'll never be better than that. Or the inner, despairing voice of things are hopeless, things will never get better, life is a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury signifying nothing, you know, that great Shakespeare quote. Or that inner, fear that speaks to us, like doom is around the corner. Be on guard. There are so many helpful counter voices in scripture that we can actually use as almost as weapons against those inner voices that lead to discouragement and just where we can wear ourselves out, right? I think the other thing that's really important is surround ourselves with people who can help us remember what's true and can speak into those broken places, right? Because don't most people, Adam, love the opportunity to show up for somebody else who's in a lower place and to say, hey, you know, can you help me? And, you know, I mean, who doesn't say yes to that opportunity for a friend or for a family member or for a neighbor, right? To let other people show up for you in the same way that you would show up for them if the tables were reversed. I just, in my own experience, Adam, just speaking for myself, there's nothing that's a better antidote for me to regret, hurt, fear, and things like it than the hope that comes from getting to know Jesus Christ. I mean, my friend and mentor, Tim Keller, who's a pastor and author like you and I are, and he's, you know, been out in New York City for a lot of years, got to spend a few years on the team with him there, over a decade ago, but known him for, you know, over 15 years. And, you know, he's going through, incurable cancer right now. And every interaction I've had with him recently, the questions always come up, you know, how you doing? And he's saying, these are the happiest days of my life. And, you know, how can somebody say they're in the happiest days of their lives when the worst thing that's ever happened to them is happening to them? And his answer to that is pretty simply that, he's read through the Bible every year of his life for over 60 years and prayed through 5 Psalms a day, every day for over 60 years, and surrounded himself with people who will remind him of all the promises that are in there. And that's really prepared him for this season that he's in right now, not only to get through it, but to have joy. And it's not some fake joy that kind of pushes the hard things under the rug. It's the kind of joy that faces the hard things and says, you are no match for not only the life that I've lived up to this point, but but to the life that I'm promised, even if death takes me, it will only be like a shadow. It won't be like a Mack truck hitting me, right? And so I don't know. There's just nothing like the hope that Christ brings. But sometimes we need people around us to remind us of these things.
Yes. Oh, that's fantastic. Three things that are so important to be an emotionally healthy follower of Jesus. And I know for myself, I've been on a journey over the last 4 years to becoming more emotionally healthy, but three specific things: joy, gratitude, and one that we rarely mention is this thing called lament and lamenting. Mm-hmm. First off, if you'd be willing to share, what does it mean to lament? And how is that something we can begin to live out if we've never experienced it?
Yeah, I mean, lamenting is, I think, simply being honest and being willing to be honest out loud about how hard and broken things can be, including us, right? You know, that famous Leonard Cohen lyric, there's a crack in everything, but that's how the light gets in. Or REM, Everybody Hurts, right? Or are you a Gen X guy, Adam? Are you an REM guy? Or you're probably a little too young for REM.
I'm a little too young, but my oldest brother would listen to REM quite a bit.
Yeah. So I'll be with your oldest brother there. They got a song called Everybody Hurts. Bob Dylan sings about how everybody's broken. Like, it's a reality of living in the world that we live in, which, you know, the Bible calls a fallen world. And to be able to do that, right? Like there are, you know, the counselor I work with, is this guy named Chip Dodd, and he's identified 8 core emotions. And 7 of them are emotions that we will associate with distress or pain, like sadness or guilt or shame or loneliness or anger or fear. 7 of the 8 core emotions. The one sort of positive, happy emotion would be what you call gladness, right? It's kind of the catch-all for the good feelings that we get. But if God has made us into those kinds of people, and if we look in like the Psalms, which are our model for how to pray, all of those emotions are openly expressed. If we look at Jesus at the tomb of Lazarus, he gets angry and he weeps tears. If we look at Jesus headed to the cross, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow, even to the point of death. Like he laments out loud. He weeps out loud. He weeps over Jerusalem and their betrayal and rejection of him. You know, he weeps out loud, and there's something about it. It's almost like breathing, where like the breathing process, when we exhale, we're getting the toxins out, right? Because when we inhale oxygen, what's left after the nourishing oxygen goes through our system is carbon dioxide, which is poison for our system. And that's what we're exhaling. We're exhaling the carbon dioxide. We're getting the toxins out. And interestingly, the carbon dioxide is what causes the plants to flourish, right? And so by exhaling that which is, you know, experienced as bad for us, we're actually contributing to something that is helpful to the world around us, which is ironic, right?
But it is.
You know that phrase, misery loves company, right? And so like if I'm feeling really down or really guilty, and you're the first person to say, hey, Scott, I'm feeling really down and guilty about something, like that creates a community moment for us, that you have lamented that. And, you know, and then we can talk about it, and we can engage about the different scriptures and the different books that we've read that may be encouragement. We can remind each other of what's true and what's a lie. There's this wonderful phrase that Dietrich Bonhoeffer has, where he says, the word of Christ on my brother's mouth is stronger than the word of Christ in my own heart. And so when we lament out loud, it gives other people an opportunity to speak those words that are already in our heart, like God loves you, or you're forgiven, or you're a child of God, or, you know, God's compassion is for you. It's one thing to have those things in our hearts, but then to hear it said, you know, just strengthens what's in our hearts. And so lament is actually a way to give the community around us and the people and friends around us an opportunity to speak powerfully into our lives, you know, those truths that are healing truths.
To get really practical, how can I take a step towards lamenting in my own individual life?
Yeah, well, first thing I would say is, whoever said feelings were bad? It's like saying, you know, our fingers are bad, or our, you know, our sense of smell is bad, right? Like, feelings are something God gave us. Feelings are part of the image of God, just like every other part of us. And so the question is not so much, are feelings a good thing, because they are, but are we stewarding them in a way that's healthy or in a way that's unhealthy, right? So like there's raging anger, which is not healthy. Raging anger attacks people, and attacks good things. Righteous anger attacks problems, in order to protect and help people and solve problems, right? And so, you know, an emotion, just like, you know, a dollar bill, can be used for really good purposes and healthy purposes and life-giving purposes, or really hurtful and damaging ones. The same is true for every feeling. And so the starting point, you know, really, I think is to, you know, and it's a vulnerable thing. And I think yeah. why the one of the reasons why we say, oh, feelings, that's too emotional, is that we're scared of emotions, yeah. right? Because yeah. it feels vulnerable. Because it is vulnerable to talk about how you feel, to get out of the world of just the head and into the world of the heart, and to express what's in there is so vulnerable, because what you're doing is you're putting something out there that other people could use to hurt you.
Yeah.
And so by being transparent and emoting out loud. And so what we need to, you know, understand is that vulnerability is part of what it means to be like Christ. I mean, he made himself vulnerable constantly, and he's responsible for healing the universe. And that was part of the whole process. We become healing agents when we become transparent, and we also invite other people into, you know, a relational world that's a lot more real, and where real connection is going to happen better than just talking about ideas or talking about our favorite sports teams, which is fine.
Yep.
But there's a greater depth that cannot be accessed unless we're able to say, hey, man, I'm feeling really sad today. Or, hey, I'm feeling really excited and hopeful today. Can I tell you about that? Or, I'm feeling really hurt right now. Can you help me process this? You know, that's a deeper level of connection that can only happen when we're willing to make ourselves vulnerable in that way. And it's how God's wired us. But it takes courage, and it takes maybe a mutual agreement between friends, or maybe a husband and a wife, to be willing to go there. And you know, like anything, like riding a bike, it's awkward at first, but over time it becomes natural and life-giving and free. But like anything, it's got to be fought for.
Yeah. Oh, I'm always amazed by, at face value, we could look at another person and say they're angry, or we're just an angry person. But oftentimes it's like, are you really angry, or are you sad? Like, and mm-hmm. Anger is such an easy emotion to default to. And so you're actually not an angry person. You're a sad person. You're grieving. You feel like you don't have yeah. any purpose. I had someone the other day tell me that they were just really bored right now and began to to cry as soon as they told me that they were bored. Mm-hmm. And that was such a profound thought, just to like, wow, this like this deep sadness from feeling like there's really nothing in a day that I feel like I'm put here for. So I think if that's new for you, really just to be still and maybe just ask God, what am I feeling? Like genuinely, like what emotion? Well, I'm embarrassed because I got overlooked for this promotion. Okay, well that's a different emotion than anger or you know, resent. Like it's those deeper things that I think are so important.
Yeah.
Scott, I wanna just for your book again, Beautiful People Don't Just Happen. What is your greatest hope for anybody who picks up a book?
Yeah, I mean, my hope is that they will leave with more hope after having, you know, engaged the book. And I'm it's probably, you know, the most memoirish of all my books. I'm a lot more, I think, transparent and open about my own life and struggles in there than the ones prior. But I really want people just to experience a shot of encouragement, you know, in those pain points, especially of regret or hurt or fear or some combination of them. I want people to leave with encouragement, right? And encouragement means to put courage into, you know, somebody who's lacked courage to face whatever it is that they're facing before. And I hope it has that effect. I try to saturate it with, you know, the promises that God has for people in certain situations and try to illustrate it through different life stories and quotes and banana bread metaphors and all that. But bottom line, I want people to be encouraged and I want them to know that if they belong to Jesus Christ, even if they don't feel it, the truth is that their best days are always in the future and never in the past. And that there's always hope. And you know, that's especially true for those who trust in Christ.
The Conversation with Adam Weber is produced by the Converge Podcast Network and proudly distributed on Faith Radio. Special thanks to these partners. For more information on this show, visit convergepodcast.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.